But the reason that you're here is because your self-awareness, your self-approval, which drives your commitment. In order for people to escape the matrix, they must unlearn the things that they've been indoctrinated with, unlearn the things that have been downloaded in them between ages 0 and 7, based upon their environment, the people they see, the culture that they're born in. It governs their behavior years later. And so what you're doing is saying, escape the matrix. As speakers, as coaches, as entrepreneurs, what you do is distract, dispute, and inspire. How people live their lives is a result of the story they believe about themselves. They begin to see their lives through your eyes. And as a result of that encounter, their lives will never be the same again.
That right there, ladies and gentlemen, is the legendary Les Brown, who was a guest speaker at our event, Escape the Matrix, a couple months ago. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll be releasing that mastermind conversation behind stage, after his talk on stage, with our key leaders, our key guys that were there at the event. And so you're going to get access to that conversation tomorrow afternoon. So make sure you subscribe to the Seven Figure Squad YouTube channel to get access to that special mastermind conversation for free. It's part of being the Seven Figure Squad community. So how did Les Brown impact you, brother?
The man that I've been following since I was a teenager, bro. I've been following this guy since I was a teenager. I think it was a year ago or 2 years ago that I think it was during the COVID season where you and Ivan went to go visit him. Mm-hmm. And then you guys gave me the opportunity to be able to FaceTime a guy that I've been following.
Yeah.
And then I see him again. I show him the video. He recognizes me from the FaceTime call. He remembers our conversation.
Wow, good memory.
And he tells me, like, you still have the voice of a radio person. We need to be able to connect. And after he got done with the interview, he's like, young man, come here. I want to connect with you.
Yeah.
Grab my phone, put your number in it. Let's connect. Let's keep in contact. And whenever you're in Atlanta, get in contact with me, see what we can do together. So that right there is mind-blowing. And reason why, having the right people in your corner and making sure that you do what you can do to serve others can open doors for you. And so, Matt, I really do appreciate even providing that opportunity, man, for meet someone that I've been following and that has helped me overcome a lot of things from my youth.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Les Brown's absolutely, brother. I mean, this guy, he was the first tapes and CDs.
Yeah, I remember those.
I got when I was coming up in business, getting me out of my funk coming out the military, man. So absolutely, man. I'm glad to pay that forward. So what a show we have today, episode 70 here. Total eclipse. What was this economic impact that was triggered because of the eclipse on Monday, right? It was Monday.
Monday.
Right? It was very dramatic here in Dallas. What was the economic impact? Deion Sanders caught on camera disciplining his players. We're going to review that. Mm. And debunking clickbait myths for food and proper diet. Governor Newsom also issued last Monday a $20 hour minimum wage in California and says more people need to be happy. So we're going to be unpacking today this episode here on the Seven Figure Squad podcast. What income do you need to make to be happy in your specific state? How to identify financial opportunities and avoid mistakes. Sometimes, Milton, a lot of people see opportunities right in front of them, right in front of their face because they don't have the lens, or this month becoming financial literacy month, they don't have the financial literacy to read and write financial stuff and opportunities.
Yeah.
A great opportunity just passes them by. It's kind of like you have the roadmap to get you where you want to go. You have the directions to save your life. But if you don't know how to read and write, no matter if it's right in front of your face, they just pass you by. It's just all mumbo jumbo. But if you're improving your financial literacy, you're going to understand and identify financial opportunities. So we're going to be talking about that today, how not to miss these, because this can cost you not only millions, but also years of your life. And also, what separates dreamers from those that live their dreams, according to Warren Buffett. So let's jump right into the eclipse, man.
Yeah.
You found some interesting data here relating to the eclipse. You want to impact that real quick?
So, and the reason I want to speak about these eclipses, right? Well, first of all, it was the first time I ever experienced them along those lines.
Likewise, me too, man.
First time ever, man. And it reminds me.
That was crazy.
The the reason why it was astounding was because when I was younger, there's a movie, I'm not sure if you heard of the movie,
Apocalypto. Of course, I love that movie.
One of the best movies that I've ever watched myself, because it feels relatable to me. Those are my people, like ancestors.
Those are your Mayans.
Yes, exactly. So, Jordan, we can pull up this 7-second clip and go skip to 220 so we can see what I'm talking about.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heads are rolling. There it is. There's the totality eclipse. Bingo.
So with that, so one of the things that we probably don't acknowledge is the guy who was spazzing out in the video, that's an actual thing whenever there's a full moon or eclipses. There's actual people who have seizures or epilepsy episodes when there's a full moon or when there's eclipses.
Yeah.
I don't know the extreme science behind it, but I know there's something gets triggered within them that causes those episodes. But watching that, again, it's a very, very cool experience to have, especially that the next one's going to be, 2045, which will be, I'll be 52 years old.
Shit, hold on, how much older am I than you?
You're 50.
I'm 50.
I'm 32.
So 18.
18.
So 18 plus 50, what?
You're asking Improviser West Kid. Right? You're asking Improviser West Kid.
How would you be? There's a bunch of guys in a finance show doing math.
Pull out your calculator, bro.
How old will you be in 2045?
52.
So I'm 18 years older than you.
70.
Okay, right. I'll be 70, bro.
Yeah, 70.
I'll be 70 years old.
But what triggered this conversation, and it goes well with this episode, or just this one, the channel, is that I got left with a lot of FOMO, fear of missing out. FOMO of every opportunity that I potentially could have taken with what this eclipse did for the economy, especially for what you call it, the trail that the eclipse went on. You were talking about it in the restaurant where there's only a certain trail of states cities.
Oh, the path of the eclipse. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Went through, you want to go over that?
So with that, every single state and city that got hit with that path of totality.
That's right.
That. Those were the cities that were mostly full. But some of them were like Missouri, deep South Illinois, Oklahoma. But not a lot of people would want to drive out to those places due to obvious reasons. But Dallas, Texas, was one of the cities that got hit with totality, which over 400,000 people flew down to Texas, and that caused a massive impact in the economy of Dallas.
Totality started in Jonah, Texas.
Yeah.
So Jonah, as we know in the Bible, was headed to Nineveh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Nineveh is seven cities that it passed through.
Yeah.
Seven cities named Nineveh.
Yeah.
Through Texas, and crossed through the Ark, and ended in Rapture.
Yeah.
Sure. Kind of a weird commonality there, but anyway, continue.
Which is why a lot of my clients actually called off on Monday. They're like, Milton, we're gonna spend time with their families, we're gonna stay home, we're gonna pray. We suggest you do the same. So because of that, a lot of people were actually terrified that the end times were here, that the world was coming to an end.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh well, it happens. I'm gonna die at the gym that I work out at. So that's cool. But the FOMO aspect came from the amount of business that it brought to Texas.
Yep.
Picturing, man, look at over 400,000 people flying in, driving in.
Yeah.
Almost every hotel booked, hotels, Airbnbs, local eateries and shops, anything that sold the glasses, the t-shirts, the hats, the attire for it. And then going on anything along the path of totality affecting, you know, direct sales.
Yep.
Airlines.
Yep.
Airlines provided more flights so people can have a sky view of the eclipse.
It's nuts.
Car rental services,
bro. To be able to see the eclipse from the airplane?
Look at that.
Wow.
Online streaming services as well. And then any little mom and pop brick and mortar storefront store that was here in Dallas that was, you know, open during that time, the opportunity that came to them. So now, because I got left with that FOMO, I want to be able to translate that to what we got going on here and for people watching. When you have opportunities, you know, how can you identify it's an opportunity and what steps can you take to make sure that you don't miss out on an opportunity to capitalize on something like this or something on the external?
Yeah, well, before I jump in, I want you to read some data here in terms of the economic eclipse. But by the way, the economic eclipse found another cure, a cure for screen addiction.
Yeah.
Which is with 2 minutes. Because during that eclipse, internet traffic plunged for those 2 minutes, for those 2 minutes to 30 minutes, between 40 and 60%. Imagine internet traffic plunging 40-60% for 2 to 30 minutes. No more, nobody, if anything, you're shooting video.
Yeah, video.
But you're not on your screen.
From your own camera, right.
Right. You're right. Not scrolling through. You're not in scroll hell. Also, $427.7 million was brought to the Lone Star State, Texas. In economic impact of $1.4 billion, Fort Worth, Arlington, and Grapevine will get a slice of that economic pie right here in Dallas, the DFW Metroplex, with an estimated 53.9% million in direct expenditures and an economic impact here in the north, in the DFW area of $197.2 million. It's a massive, massive impact to our economy. So, you know, oftentimes we look at economic impact. You know, somebody was asking Warren Buffett. It was Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
So, Warren, how come more people don't listen to you, man? You're known as the Oracle of Omaha, right? Oracle of Omaha. And I just want to share, if you can go to my screen here real quick, I just want to show this graphic.
My screen's not showing up.
Uh-oh, that's not good. We're going to need my screen here throughout the show because I got some articles to pop up. But anyway, Warren Buffett was told, Jeff Bezos was told by Warren Buffett, nobody listens to me a lot because I teach people how to get rich slow. So oftentimes people today, they're jumping on savings, now they're jumping on Bitcoin, now they're jumping on this, but right, there's always something else. You miss out on economic impact because you're always jumping towards things. Mm. You're quick to jump in things and also quick to jump off things. So when you're looking at wealth building, wealth is considered long-term. Financial success is considered long-term. Confidence and stability is long-term. Generational wealth is long-term. And so, yeah, you want to see my screen here? Risk and there it is, okay? Nobody wants to get rich slow. How about you? This is a 7-figure squad YouTube channel. It took me into my 40s to start getting rich. I've been at this since I was 23, 24, 25 years old. It took me in my 40s to get rich. And here's what I consider rich. Multiple 7-figure income coming in. Way above beyond my expenses. Where things like inflation doesn't affect you. Where getting a ticket doesn't affect you. Some people are so pissed off because not only are they late for work, but they got a $100 fine. Don't let those things piss you. I got pulled over the other day. I'm chill. I'm cool. Right? I'm complying. I'm not stressed. Why? Because somebody years ago taught me the rules of getting money. We can stop sharing my screen. Risk and losses even out over the long term if you stay long term. So one of the ways to identify financial opportunities is it triggering a get rich quick mechanism inside me? For example, people go to the casino.
Yep.
Get rich quick opportunity. People play the lottery. Get rich quick opportunity. I can't tell you how many times my father on Saturday mornings at Citgo gas station going on Ogden. I remember it very clearly. Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock because we're going places. But he wouldn't go anywhere unless he bought his lottery ticket at the Citgo gas station at 8 o'clock on Monday on Saturday mornings.
With the scratch offs or the little lottos? No,
the full ticket, bro.
Full ticket.
Like you bet like $5, $10.
My dad would get the little filling circles, the little lottos, the Mega Millions, all that. Every single day. For him, it was every day.
Yeah.
He really believed, and hey, man, all power to my father, right? But he really did believe that was going to be the answer to our issues. Buying lottery tickets until we came across some big money. And most he ever came across probably like $400, man.
And bro, lottery tickets are considered a tax on the poor. Yeah. Why? Because they never win. And you think rich people are playing freaking lottery? Rich people are playing freaking lottery.
Yeah.
Now, rich people may gamble for entertainment purposes. By the way, how many times have we been in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
In the last, 5 years?
Yeah.
Since 2019, we've been training together?
Yeah.
How many times have you seen me, hey, Milton, bro, we're in Vegas. I mean, break off to the blackjack table.
No, bro, I've only seen you gamble your health, not sleeping. That's about it. That's the most I've seen this man gamble.
So here are three things I'd say. Are rules that Warren Buffett says on terms of living your dream. Here are three things that Warren Buffett says on those who achieve their dream and those who are just wannabes. So number one, you got to say no to a lot of things. So when people say, do this, do that, do that. That's why in my book, Faith Made Millionaire, I talk about the four homes of money using a test called the laser test, liquidity, safety, rate of return, tax advantages. If whatever somebody's pitching you to an investment, have it pass the liquidity, safety, rate of return, and tax advantage test. If it doesn't have three of the four qualities of liquidity, safety, rate of return, and tax advantages, don't put your money in there. Now, I'm not giving you financial advice. All I am is giving a system to not get emotional. The reason why people miss opportunities, because they're emotional. They're in their feelings.
Yeah.
When you are low on logic or low on literacy, emotion is high. FOMO kicks in. Missing out kicks in. So Warren Buffett says, number one, condition yourself to say no to most things. Second, choose people that are operating on integrity. People that have been through good times and in bad times and still maintain their character. And still maintain their dignity. If you're going to get, he says here, if you're going to get someone without integrity, you want them lazy and dumb.
Lazy and dumb.
If you got somebody without integrity, you want them lazy and dumb. Because they'll never outwork you. They'll never outsmart you. Yeah. You'll always outsmart them. You'll always outwork them. Third thing, you got to build up your knowledge daily. Build up your knowledge daily. Constantly read. I can tell you're always constantly reading. Yeah. You bring up this topic about the eclipse. It's not necessarily your core topic in terms of faith. But of health and wellness. But you're looking at the world in a different lens.
100%, bro.
So that's what happens when you are reading. You're constantly personal developing. You're consuming content and building your knowledge daily. Because if you do that, let's say you study about life insurance, you study about retirement saving, you study about Roth IRAs, you study about savings and investments in real estate. If you're constantly building on your knowledge base, guess what starts happening to you? Feeding yourself information that down the road you can start asking better quality questions. So therefore, you can get better quality answers. So you just got living a better quality of life. That's my two cents.
And better quality of life comes from the right leadership, comes from the right mentorship, and also comes from being disciplined the correct way. Having the right people in your life to be able to discipline you, guide you, and lead you, and not be a victim to whatever these people say, and not feel like a victim every time you get held accountable. Yeah. Something like Deion Sanders was doing with his players. I think you have that topic, correct?
Yeah. So speaking of which, this guy here, man, once in a lifetime generation type of leader, not just player, leader. And if you have an opportunity to get around the leaders, guys with character, like Coach Deion Sanders, Coach Primetime, we interviewed him a couple years ago, and he's just continuing to grow. He's just continuing to evolve his career. He's making some tough decisions, and he's continuing to grow in LA in spite of what people say about him. But I love what he says because it resonates with how we're building our business, because we have a saying in our office. We take it from Joe Jordan. I said, listen, many of the people we serve in the multicultural middle-class demographic, in terms of giving them insurance guidance, retirement guidance, helping them understand the retirement plan, helping them understand their 401k, their 457 plan, having them understand final expense insurance and early mortgage payoff strategies. A lot of our clients in the multicultural middle class will probably never get rich, mm-hmm. but they don't deserve to be broke.
Yeah.
And that's what we're progressing, is helping people get away from getting part of that gap in wealth. And Coach Deion Sanders says this, and we say this in our office. We're not here to just get you rich. We're here to get you better citizens. We're here to create better men. We're here to create better women. We're here to create better children, better sons and daughters and grandparents, because of our culture, because of our community. Because nobody's playing what you just talked about earlier, which is the victim role. Like, I can't change my life because of whatever, fill in the blank. And Coach Sanders says, hear this. You may never make it to the NFL. But I promise you, you're going to be a father one day. I promise you, you're going to be a dad one day. I promise you, you're going to be an uncle one day. I promise you, you're going to be an employee one day or an entrepreneur one day. You need to be a better man in whatever context you find yourself in. And learning that from the sport of football and through my program, which is here at the Colorado Buffaloes, you're going to learn how to become a better man with opportunities we talked about earlier and have the opportunities sent your way. So let's take a look at this clip about Coach Sanders addressing his students in a particularly heated moment.
Any job grade? Next. Guys, you're going to get something out of this. You're going to be a man, or you're going to be a great football player. Since you choose not to be a great football player, we got to make you a man. We good with that? Carry on. Let's have a great one.
I'm a little frustrated. I'm a little angry.
Hold on. Pause real quick. I think we missed it out. And what he was reading was an email.
Yeah, it was an email.
He was reading an email from a professor.
Correct.
And the email from a professor is, your students, your players, which is our student, aren't acting right in class.
Correct.
And he's reading what that email was, basically embarrassing the locker room, embarrassing the brand of football that Coach Sanders is out there looking to create.
Correct.
Because he said, listen, we're going to get the right people here in this locker room. We're going to get the right people at this school. We're going to get the right people here playing the game of football so that people of Colorado is happy about this program. Let's continue with the video.
Be in this new collective in NIL state of mind, we got youngsters that's all in on one side of the game. 90% or 95% of your roster ain't going pro. So coaches, we got to emphasize education. We got to emphasize life. We got to emphasize the next step, the next elevation if it don't work in the game. Come here. So today was not wonderful. But I'd be darned if I allow these kids to get out of here without something.
Bingo. Love it. Love it. He's making an impact. He may never play football professionally and make the millions of dollars in the NFL or whatever the case may be, in the XFL. But you are going to be somebody I've made an imprint on, made an impact on because of the lessons you're learning here in the sport of football, in the game of football. What's your thoughts on that, brother?
My football coaches, even though I didn't make it to the NFL, I didn't make it to the big boy league, mm-hmm. I learned a lot of my biggest lessons from being in the locker room with my football coaches.
Of course, man.
But one of the things that I noticed about going back a decade later and helping out at the school and volunteering, whether it's strength and conditioning or just mentorship, is that it goes back to what you say. This generation's underfathered and overly mothered. And when that occurs, any moment a coach tries to have some form of influence or hold a student accountable, man to man to boy, whatever you want to call it, man to young man, and the young man goes and tells the mom or the overly feminized father who doesn't believe in quote-unquote discipline or accountability or owning up to your faults, they end up going to school, getting into arguments with the deans, getting into arguments with the administrators, getting into arguments with the coaches. So now they're taking power away from those coaches, mm-hmm. from actually allowing them to do what they're supposed to do, and that's coaching, mentoring, lead your kids to the next level of life.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful for what my coaches were able to do for me, man.
And I appreciate that too as well. And all the coaches that helped me out too as well. I still remember Coach Jericho, Coach Baglione. All these coaches made an impact. Coach Vecchio. Yeah. These guys have helped me out immensely in my life, even though they're just doing this as a side gig. Maybe yeah. getting paid another $100, $200 to coach a game. But they made an impact on my life. So I thank you, coaches that's out there making an impact on the players that you and the students that you have the chance to coach. And I'm referencing here in my favorite book, which is the Bible here, Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. And King Solomon here, who's regarded as the richest and wisest king who ever lived, is having a conversation, writing a letter to his sons, his children. And he talks to them about what separates leaders from followers. It says here in verse 1 through 4, it says, "My son, if you receive my words," notice how he's not saying, "Son, you got to listen to me because I'm your dad."
Yeah.
So even King Solomon is not coming from the position of entitlement. He's like, "Son, consider listening to my words."
Yeah.
Right? He says, "Son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her for hidden treasures, then you understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." So what he's really said, listen, man, do you want it? Why do you want it? How badly do you want it? Why is the situation that you're in? So it's interesting here, if you guys are going to meditate on a certain scripture this week, meditate on these words, because even these four sentences in these four verses, he uses some specific words, which is translated obviously into English, but it's very powerful here that says, listen, he's looking for the higher law of you living your life. Coach Sanders is looking for the higher law of how these men are about to live their life. And what we need more today of is strong men that's inclining their ear to wisdom and approaching the life and seeking the voice for understanding and seeking her like silver. So in other words, he romanticized
yeah.
seeking wisdom like a woman. Seek her like silver.
Because he calls wisdom in the Bible, refers to as her.
He romanticizes.
Romanticizes the idea of it.
Right.
Because he knows, he understands how men work.
Exactly.
How he romanticizes the opposite sex.
Because he was a father, but he was a man too.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, the downfall of King Solomon later on in Ecclesiastes, because, you know, he's frolicking about. Yeah.
And when you have these kind of mentors, one of the things that I see with when people are trying to guide you in the right direction, they want you to avoid the mistakes that they committed.
Yeah.
Knowing that it takes a lot of responsibility to choose the right career path, knowing that it takes a lot of responsibility to know which direction you're headed after a certain age, after each decade, after yeah. every milestone, including choosing the right woman to have by your side. Which, if you're cool with this, have you ever heard of this religious leader or author called Jordan B. Hinckley?
Jordan B. Hinckley rings a bell, but no.
He died over 25-30 years ago, but this man has gone across the nations and even worldwide, considered one of the highest well-known authors and religious leaders, that from he's been appointed as a child up to his point of death to be a prophet for
for
God.
Okay.
Right. And you know, in a lot of religions, you know, there's evangelists, there's prophets, there's apostles, there's pastors. There's different levels of what, you know, people are given. And I still to this day do believe that spiritual gifts are a real thing when it comes down to discernment and how you are serving God and the greater purpose of why we're here.
Okay.
But
you got me curious.
But speaking about this guy, according to this religious leader, you know, for me, for you, if someone were to ask you, Matt, what is true success to you in this world? If you had to choose maybe the top two, three things, what would success mean to you, and how would it be portrayed?
I mean, success. I mean, how do you know what's my drive? I want to make an impact. I want to make a difference. So that to me is an impact. So if there's an impact not only in my life, but I'm able to share that with other people, whether it be 5 or 10 or 15 or 20, obviously my children want to make an impact on it. I want not be the reason why my children don't want to succeed and live out God's purpose for their life. I don't want to be the reason. I don't want to be the reason for my kids to have an excuse of why they're not winning. Yeah. Whether it be not only from a principle and value standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
I tell my kids all the time, listen, the better, the merit of you being raised with me, even though when you were growing up, I was broke, but now I got money, you know, dad's got a bag now. Dad's got a different set of financial circumstances. Let me invest in your life. Let me invest in your situation. Notice I didn't say give you money. I said invest in your life, because now I expect a business plan. Now I expect a return on my investment. Now I expect them to be accountable to the money they're receiving, because I'm still a steward of the finances that God's given me. So I want to make an impact on the people that I have the honor and pleasure of having come to our office. I feel that I owe them a example of success. I owe them the opportunity for me to meet them halfway. Mm-hmm. They got to do their part, because I'm willing to do my part. I feel like sometimes I'm like Coach Sanders. I'm easy to find. You know where to find me on Monday night.
Yes.
You know where to find me on Tuesday night.
Right.
You know where to find me on Saturday morning. Right. I'm easy to find. Why? Because I'm stable. I'm not skipping out on success. So to answer your question, that's the definition of success, is what type of impact that I make. And number two, what type of financial inheritance? Seriously, well, money's not everything. Well, guess what? Everything in this world requires money. So I want to provide at least a sum of financial resources to get my family and the next generation and generations at least some form of financial head start. They got to work on the credit. I can't do that from the grave. But at least I can say, hey, if you do your part as a citizen, you do your part as a Sapala, you're part of our family lineage, this X amount of dollars will be set aside for your future benefit. Would it be to buy a house? Would it be start a business? But this is an opportunity for you to start campaigning for the rest of your life. That impact, because if I'm making an impact, I want you to make an impact, because now I have the financial resources to help back you. And number three, I want to make sure at the end of the day, I'm pleasing God in all that I do. I'm making an impact that God says, listen, my good and faithful servant, come in here. I've been waiting for you, man. And the impact you've been making, I want the conversation when I hit the pearly gates. That's my definition of success.
And as a man, you understand the responsibility. You have clarity on what it is, because you've been through the pits. You've failed yourself multiple times, but you failed forward consistently. Yeah. So with that, let's see what Mr. Hinckley has to say on what true success is according to him.
Young man, now is the time to prepare for the future. And in that future, for most of you, is a beautiful young woman whose greatest desire is to bond with you in a relationship that is eternal and everlasting. You will know no greater happiness than that found in your home. You will have no more serious obligation than that which you face in your home. Mm-hmm. The truest mark of your success in life will be the quality of your marriage.
Yep, I agree. And guess what? I got a lot of work to do. I got a lot of work to do in that department. I've been married now 9 years, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. Yeah. I got to do a better job of having a quality life. It's something I'm working at. I'm just glad that.
Yeah.
You know, we make the time and the resources to improve that quality of life. So
my question to you is, Matt, 20 years old, Matt today, and being in a position that you're in, you're considered top 1% when we look at success and finances. So being in the top 1% as a man, how do you balance out having a relationship and a fruitful marriage with business?
Yeah.
How do you find that balance?
Bro, I despise that word balance.
Balance? despise that word balance. What word would you utilize instead of balance?
Priorities.
So how do you prioritize your relationship versus your business.
God first, family second, finances third. Football fourth.
Yeah.
No, but you know, God, so am I pleasing God and honoring God and all that I do? That's number one. And number two, and by the way, if I've been given a wife from God, am I honoring her, which honors God?
Yeah.
If I've been given children, am I honoring my children, which honors God?
Yeah.
So that's got to be the priority. And you see me, bro, I'm a busy guy. We've been in meetings since 8 o'clock this morning.
Right. Correct.
And you saw me in the middle of our meeting. I had another meeting.
Correct.
And then in that meeting, I had another meeting. And then I still got to go to my kids' games. I still got to go serve my wife. I still got to date my wife. I still got to, the other four kids, total of five kids, I got to make time for them, obviously in different ways.
So with that, as of last week, we've actually had someone who's actually located in Dallas. And with this specific topic, they inspired this topic because they want to speak about faith and relationships.
Okay.
And this person has a question for you. We actually had someone who call in, and which will I will be putting him on speaker.
Yeah.
So the audience and you can hear him.
Okay.
Her name is Cecily Wilson from Dallas, Texas. Cecily Wilson from Dallas, Texas.
What a cool name.
You want to say hi to her first?
Sure. Cecily, how you doing? Money Smart Guy Matt Cipolla here. I appreciate you calling in.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Matt. Hi, Milton.
How you doing? Good. She said hi to you too as well.
Hello, Cecily. Sorry.
You're on speaker now. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Well, good afternoon, everybody. I am enjoying today's show.
Thank you.
I am a new follower to the podcast.
Wow.
And have enjoyed each of the episodes that I've been able to tune into. But I have a question with regards to this topic. I know you just defined kind of what it meant, like what success means to you, and you guys are talking about, you know, how you balance, or I think you use the word prioritize, both your personal and professional priorities. I might have missed this, so if I did, I apologize, but are there like any specific approaches or habits that you've learned throughout your marriage to be able to maintain that healthy balance between the two, especially considering that a marriage and relationship buildings and, you know, your professional pursuits are both very demanding. And then Milton, I have a question for you, but I'll let Matt answer.
For sure. All right. Cess, I appreciate you calling in, and the intentionality of your question, I appreciate. In terms of, you know, mentors and coaches, I've always looked at my pastors, Pastor Choco in Hubble Park.
Yeah.
Now my pastor here, Keith Kraft, and any leader that he's surrounded himself, both Pastor Choco. My Pastor Choco, for example, surrounds himself with Pastor Rico and Pastor Ephraim. And I've observed their relationship not only with each other as men and as brothers, you know, spiritual brothers,
sure,
right? Not only DNA brothers, but also how they're running the church and how they're living their lives. And so I've witnessed Ephraim with his wife and Rico with his wife, and obviously Pastor Choke with Elizabeth de Jesus. And here in Dallas, I've observed Pastor Keith Kraft, his wife, his Miss Precious, and observed who he surrounds himself with too as well. His brothers, Uncle Bach, Pastor Garrett, Uncle Bach is his son. Mm. His son Joshua Kraft, how he is a father to his son. So I'm just observing the behaviors and how they're doing. Now, although they're not all perfect, they have all their riffraff and they have their differences, but what brings them back together is the love for one another, the love for God, the love for their purpose, the love for what they're creating, the future, the legacy that they're creating. So, and that's a long-term thing. And so, you know, that's the area of priority that I see them doing, even though they have a church to build. And I've seen both of these pastors who are also very entrepreneurial in their behavior because they've grown the church, they've grown the mission. I saw Pastor Choco, he's known as the mayor of Humble Park. I saw Pastor Keith Kraft here, just witnessed him the last couple of years, literally become the quote-unquote mayor of Frisco and how he's building Frisco. So I see the impact they're making in their family, the impact they're making in their city, their community, but also the impact they're making in the relationship first and foremost with God, which obviously in any relationship requires a lot of work. And that's where prayer life comes in.
Yeah.
That's where time comes in. And that's where we prioritize. Okay, you got to have finances to get some of your time back. If you weren't born with wealth, you're born with a financial head start. You got to find ways to get that time on your side, your finances on your side, so therefore you can fund and finance that time to spend with things that you prioritize.
I feel like I can't beat that answer. Should I even take a question from me? Should I take it?
By the way, yeah, exactly. And by the way, I'd love to have, if we had more time, get more feedback. But sure, Cecily, hopefully that's an answer that you can jam with. But yes. What's your question for Milton?
Go ahead, Ms. Wilson. What's your question for me?
Awesome. Well, Milton, is someone in their early 30s, I'm really curious about your personal journey. Similar, I think Matt just kind of answered a little bit of this, but have there been moments where, you had to reassess your priorities or make tough decisions regarding where you were able to put your time and energy investment into building a meaningful connection or into your business? And how have you navigated those moments of conflict or uncertainty?
All right, fantastic. So Ms. Wilson, what I'm going to do is respond to this question on air, and I will be ending this call. And then hopefully afterwards we can connect so we can get some of your feedback.
But right. I love this. I love the ability to take calls. Yes. That's a nuance to our podcast.
1,000%. So Ms. Wilson, we will speak soon. Hopefully we can see you in the live chat, and let me respond to your question on the show. Okay. All right. Bye-bye, Ms. Wilson.
Cool.
That's a loaded question. How do I navigate in my early 30s on sacrificing? So
can't wait to hear the answer to this question.
I feel like most of my 20s, I spent a lot of my time people-pleasing, wanting to have someone in my corner, meaning women, the right woman in my, by my side, that I would sacrifice my time away from my business, my work, my clients, my finances, and everything that should be a priority, and also God. And one of the things that I noticed about that, it was a very empty, void-like feeling at the end of the day, because I felt like I wasn't pursuing a form of purpose. Mm-hmm. When I got into my late 20s and early 30s, that's when I had to realize that it was no longer about a feeling nor an emotion, that it was more of a decision to make the change. And what do I want fruit to come out of? I wanted fruit to come out of my relationship with God, so that was my main priority. Mm-hmm. I wanted fruit to come out of my business, AKA income and impact. So I put that second, and I wanted to make sure that I was thanking the people in my corner that have been there from day one, including my mom, my close family and friends, including you guys who've been with me since the beginning of my business. So that way I'm able to lead from the front, because I'm chasing God and not leading from the back, because I'm chasing the wrong person. And in the last 3 years, I've actually sacrificed relationships because they weren't, and when I say they, I don't mean the woman, I just mean the relationships weren't aligned with the future vision that I had for my future.
I've seen you make tough decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you good?
Yeah.
I mean don't blame me on this. They'll give you my biggest worry is I give you counsel and feedback. And my biggest worry is that if it doesn't go right, you blame me.
No. I made my decision. Okay, coming to Dallas was my decision. Okay. Ending certain relationships because we weren't of the same faith, which was probably one of the hardest ones for me, was my decision. The previous person I was speaking to, they didn't understand my schedule was very hectic, and I had to end it because I didn't want to end up hurting her in the long run. That was my decision. And then making sure that I was covering my friends and family's behinds, covering them from the people who were opposing them, including in a recent situation that, you know, some of my clients, including yourself, were involved in, to make sure that I had to make a decision to show that I'm loyal to a certain extent in certain areas, but with the people that I've been riding with for a long time, that's where my loyalty's at.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, that's a very wise question from Cecily, isn't it?
Cecily Wilson, Cecily, of Dallas, Texas.
Good job. Appreciate you doing that. And by the way, I love the fact that we're tracking folks like Cecily and folks that want to ask bigger quality questions in life. For the most part, our demographic has been mostly men.
Yeah.
But also, I find I'm looking through the analytics, we're attracting also a lot of women to our conversation. Listen, the more we talk about these type of situations, the more we hear and feed the right information on certain topics, the more we're able to grow as a community. So I appreciate you, Cecily, for calling in. And I promise you we're going to get better, so please stick around. Speaking of happiness, because we were talking about purpose and impact. Yes. And when I was making 20 grand a year, 30 grand a year, 40 grand a year, how much money were you making at UFC?
34,000
a year. Yeah. Okay. And that's when I met you in 2019. And now this governor of California says, listen, hey, we need to really look out for people. So I'm going to force people in California who are entrepreneurs and business owners to pay a living wage of $20 an hour. Hmm. So that happened last Monday. And already there's a lot of fallout with this new law in terms of especially helping food workers. So if we can take a look at my screen, Jordan. Good. So California's new $20 an hour fast food minimum wage is so good that schools are worried they can't compete for cafeteria workers. Wow. So instead of working at the cafeteria, guess where these workers are going? They're going somewhere else in the fast food industry that could possibly pay them $20 an hour. But on the flip side, guess what happens? Guess what happens? People that have fast food restaurants can't afford to pay that many people $20 an hour.
Yeah.
So the dilemma here is people are even given another reason to leave California.
No.
They're continuing to leave the scenario where they don't feel safe. They don't feel the opportunity there. Business owners are packing up and saying, you know what? This is probably the last straw for me to say, okay, I've been sticking out with California. Now as a business owner, McDonald's, a franchisee, you know, a lot of people think that just because you own a business that you're automatically rich. A lot of that, and by the way, we're going to be unpacking here in a minute how much a gas station owner makes and earns as a gas station owner. Some of you may be shocked by what he earns. But when you're looking at a McDonald's, guess what's going to happen to that McDonald's franchise owner, that Burger King franchise owner, that Five Guys owner? And I even went as far as going to order a burrito on Monday just to see what a burrito costs. And I was shocked to see burritos in Texas. So I don't know if you can look at my screen. There it is. So I went to get a simple thing. Burrito. Okay. Chocolate chip cookie. Train's right here. Okay. And a drink, regular fountain drink. And just for a damn burrito. Can I get that thing out of my way? Just for a burrito, it cost me $17.
That was like $6-$7 a couple years ago, wasn't it?
It was like $6-$7 for a burrito. It wasn't even a monster size. I got this at Freebird.
$17. Wow. When I first got it, it was like around $12 for the burrito.
For a burrito.
Yeah.
And I got a fountain drink and I didn't even get chips. I got chocolate chip cookie. But nonetheless, everybody, that's the craziness that we're living in. So imagine having to hire somebody for your personal training business, their staff or their admin or their assistant. And no matter what, you got to pay them $20 an hour. So, by the way, do I want to pay a wage that has people have it? Of course.
Yeah.
You know what I don't like? I don't like force. Like, who's Gavin Newsom to say, as a politician, you are now I don't care what your financial situation is like, you're not going to pay your people $20 an hour.
You don't have the budget. You're going to have to relieve people of their services, aka fire people, let them go, lay them off, which then increases the workload at your franchise or at your restaurant. And when it increases the workload, people aren't going to want to work. People are going to feel burnt out, and that within itself is going to make people quit. And then the quality of your service is going to reduce, which will then you will also be losing customers. So it's a whole what do you call it? Domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole domino effect. But that's what I've seen. And I say this very respectfully. One of the things that I've noticed when I go back to Illinois, even, and the minimum wage has increased as well there as well.
Yeah.
Is the quality of service that I usually get at a McDonald's. Or at a, let's say Chipotle, let's not use McDonald's because there's a lot of high school students, but at a Chipotle,
mm-hmm.
or at a fast food place, but it's not like, you know, a bottom feeder fast food place. A couple of years ago, you would see a little bit more, you know, put together individuals mm-hmm. who speak to you with some decency.
Mm-hmm.
Now they hire people who are, you know, I would say bottom feeders when it comes down to their character. Horrible customer service, being overworked. They don't want to be there. They're exhausted. They're on their phones, but because they can't afford to hire more people on, so people have to pull double shifts on a daily basis because of that.
Yeah, they got double shift. Yeah. And the irony about this thing with Governor Newsom is, if you can show my screen once. Yeah, there you go. So Governor Newsom founded the company in 1992 called Plump Jack Group as a wine shop. Its hospitality business expanded to include 4 wineries and 4 restaurants and bars. You know what the irony is?
What is it?
On ZipRecruiter, he puts an ad out to hire people to work for his Jack Plump Jack Group. Well, guess what he's paying them? $16 an hour. So he's telling everybody to pay him $20 an hour, but his own company, his own hospitality business, he's paying $16 an hour. So that's just more evidence of situations where people say,
do busboys
do as I say, but not as they do?
Yeah, do busboys make tip? No, right?
That's not. Yeah, they make tip.
They make tip?
They make tip.
Okay.
Sometimes, though, they say no tip, just take the hourly wage.
Yeah.
You know what? My daughter's working as a server, and she has to, and this is in Dallas, and they got to share, they have the pool tips. Like, I never heard of pool tips. But by the way, so for some of you that worked restaurant business, were you working pooled tips or your individual tips? and which scenario makes you work harder? Pooled tips, where everybody throws their tips all in one big shareable box? Or you say, listen, if I bust my table and I turn more tables over than you do as a server in my section, I get to keep my tips.
What's the benefit of pool tip?
Sharing with everybody else.
Everyone's equal.
And does every, you're correct. And does everybody work just as hard?
Of course not.
Correct. It's because it's got to be equal.
So right? Then that reduces the customer service because people don't want to work as hard anymore.
For sure.
It's no longer a performance-based job.
That's right.
So then the quality goes down when it comes to customer service and the experience goes down.
And then wow. A lot of these restaurant workers, as you just mentioned earlier, aren't working full-time jobs. They don't have benefits. They don't have health benefits. They got to work a second shift or they work a second job just to make ends meet. And so you know, I'm just curious sometimes when people wonder what a happy income looks like. So there's this article here of what it takes, according to go banking rate. Okay, let's take the minimum salary. You need to be happy in every state. If we take a look at this also too as well, Jordan, the minimum salary, you need to be happy in every state, right? West Virginia, minimum happy salary, $89,000. West Virginia, $89,000. Mississippi, $91,000. Oklahoma, $91,000. Kansas, $91,000. Alabama, $92,000 to
that's
be happy.
That's surprising.
Alabama,
surprising.
The only thing going on there is the University of Alabama, right?
Yeah.
$92,000. And the thing is, if you think it's not just realistic in the state, you should know that the study's band of incomes allow for emotional well-being runs as low as $52,000. Missouri, $92,000. Arkansas, $92,000. Iowa, $94,000 be happy. Tennessee, $94,000 be happy. Louisiana, $95,000 be happy. Georgia, $95,000. Nebraska, $95,000. Michigan, everybody seeing a theme here? $90,000. Illinois, where we're from, $96,000. Unemployment rate hovers at 4.4%, suggests that a lot of people there are currently focused on making ends meet for the present. However, people can still find emotional well-being at just $55,000. Tell me this is married man with kids, $55,000 ain't going to cut
it. Enough.
I'm just curious here. Texas, $97,000. I'll just stop there. So what do you think about this happy income? Now, let me ask you this question. And Cecily?
Yeah.
And for any other listener that's out there, what income do you think you need to be earning to be quote-unquote happy? And what is happy?
Yeah.
How do we define happy? How do you define happy?
I think happy is being able to contribute and contribute to other people's happiness around you, aka your family, moms, dads, father, whatever the case may be, children, livelihoods, greater causes. To me, mm-hmm. to me, that's what happiness. I was speaking to a woman maybe about a month ago. I went on a date finally.
Wow!
And one of the questions was like,
"I'm sorry, what was his name again?
What was his name? His name was Marcos." Don't take that serious.
By the way, are we having another eclipse outside? It's 12 o'clock. Are we having another eclipse here in Dallas? It's getting dark.
It got pretty dark, man. And I asked her, hey, so how much money does a man have to be making on a yearly basis in order for you to say, yes, this is what I want to be.
Wow.
Who do I want to be with?
Wow.
And she said, well, I don't want to sound shallow. I'm like, no, just it's, you know, that's your expectation. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want, then great. Mm-hmm. You know, if I meet it, cool. If it if I don't, then cool. It's not going to affect me. She's like, the minimum that I want a man to be making on a yearly basis is at least $140,000 a year. I'm like, why $140,000 a year? And she said, because I want him to be making a little bit more than what I make. And if a man's making less than what I make, it's going to cause issues in our relationship because a man's going to feel like I'm more in a masculine position than he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And just to avoid issues, I would rather go be with a high value man when it comes down to his finances than to work with someone who's making $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, even $100,000 a year.
Yep.
So as far as happiness, to me, it's just being able to contribute, man. Help my mom out, pay some bills.
Yep.
Right. But then obviously the more money you make, the more more doors open.
Yep.
And then you realize like, shit, I can actually do more and help more when I make more money. So I don't know yet for me.
It gets more because the more you see it, it's either lifestyle creep.
Yes.
Which, you know, you don't have that problem.
No.
Or it's responsibility creep.
Yeah.
Can we look at my screen one more time? $100,000 income. 18% of people in America make $100,000. So your friend there wants to find somebody making $140,000. Well, you're looking at the first 18% of population in America, and 50% of them are probably making $100,000 or more a year are probably women.
Yeah.
So 34% of households make over $100,000 per year. 30% of white households make over $100,000 compared to only 22% of black households. 9% more men earn $100,000 per year than women. Between 2017 and 22, the share of households making over $100,000 per year increased by 2.97%. And so this is as a reason of last year, 2023. And so how much money do people think that takes for them to be happy? Does money buy happiness? Actually, yes. This is an article as of in Forbes, as recent as 2024, February 2024. And what is that number for most people to be quote unquote happy? It's $75,000. It's oddly satisfying to think that rich people aren't any happier than the middle class. By the way, does making $1 million make me happy? No. I'd say no. There's a lot of responsibility. Does it make me giddy? Yeah, it does. Yeah. But if for me to be happy, I want to make sure that my wife is taken care of. I want to make sure my kids are taken care of. I want to make sure my parents are taken care of. And to me, that was $250.
Yeah.
Sheena and I describe having food freedom at $250. Now we start having a little bit of status at $500,000, meaning that you go and people say, hey, would you like to get 10% discount off this purchase? And normally we'd say no, because it's a credit pull, blah, blah, blah. Today, we like to say, sure, yes, because we know we got the credit. So am I happy at $500,000? Do I experience that any more at $1 million? I don't. When you're making $1 million a year, you know what I'm thinking about? How much more money I can save and invest in either my businesses or other things. For example, you heard me on the call this morning with somebody at 9 o'clock, one of my investments, right? Mm-hmm. Uncle Nearest. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the growth of that company.
Right.
And I'm making connections, correct. Right? I'm making connections. And so I want to see that grow. I want to invest in the next company. I want to invest in the next company. I want to invest in the next deal, right? But more people are happy at $75,000. When I was married with kids and responsible as a parent and five kids, I felt happy at $250.
Yeah.
Food freedom. I can go to Whole Foods and not worry about whole ripoff, having that saying. I don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, if I don't take my food home because I don't finish my plate, and I'm not worried about having to take a to-go home plate. By the way, if I don't finish my food, we still take a to-go home plate. Yeah. And we give it to people out there begging for food.
Right.
We don't give money, we give out food.
Yeah.
So those are the areas of me being happy. By the way, I'm going to ask you guys, if you guys are watching this, and especially now to the end of the podcast, what type of income do you need to be making and earning for your household for you to be quote unquote happy? I'm just curious. Maybe we do a podcast, or maybe I do a video on how to make happy type income. But the premise of the show and the premise of my YouTube channel is making seven figures. Because I believe seven figures, if you want freedom, I didn't say happiness, if you want freedom, you want flexibility, you want time on your side, you want to make some big choices in your life, a lot more than where you're at today, in my opinion, it's seven figures. Seven figures, in my opinion, a new 250. Seven figures, by the way, in the next 3, 4, 5 years, and by the way, so many more people are making seven figures of income per year. You know, I'm jealous because my son, Jordan, he's going through YouTube now, and he's starting to watch, like, Roblox videos of kids, 8, 9, 10 year olds recording videos and then playing Roblox. And my 5-year-old is watching these Roblox videos. I'm looking over his shoulder and he's laughing. So in other words, somebody's monetizing my son's watch time on Roblox videos, and they're maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. Good for them.
Yeah.
They're making some money. And so I want to find my son to be making passive income through YouTube here at 8, 9, 10 years old.
What do you think would be Jordan's niche, I guess you can say, on YouTube, if you were to do something, whether it's like anything toy related, activity related, what do you think would be for Jordan that people would actually pay to see?
I think for him it'd be a skill. I think the kid's wired for sports somehow. I mean, this kid's 5 years old, 62 pounds, he's running into people and knocking him over. And the problem I have with him at school, at the church daycare, is like he keeps pushing people. No, he's not pushing people. He's just kids are running to him. He's bouncing off. He's playing just like every other kid, but they're just bouncing off him. He was a big child. We went shopping for him. We had to shop in the 8-year-old section.
How old is he?
He's five.
He's five.
We had to shop in the 8-year-old section. So it might be something along that line. I'm having a blast right now. We're homeschooling right now. Having a blast to see him talk because he's a late speaking child. Mm-hmm. I'm having a blast with him, but he takes a bat. We're messing around in the backyard with baseball, t-ball, mm-hmm. natural swing, basketball, natural dribble. Fast, quick, kids athletic. I'm running. I come home. Usually most kids run to their parents. Mommy, daddy's home. What are you, my son? He sees me. Ha! He goes, chase me? And I go, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. So I chase him. We're running, you know, the living room. Boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, kid, you are fast.
Yeah.
Because I'm Filipino, I got to take my shoes off. So I'm running around trying to chase him off my socks. I'm sliding over the floor. But kid's fast. He's quick. So maybe that might something like that.
That's a dream, man. Every time I see Matt, every time I see you play with your kids or just interact with your children, man, it's you sell me the dream on having a child.
Yes.
So now the urgency of finding someone to procreate with is starting to increase little by little.
Sure.
The older I get,
but,
bro.
But Every guy that we've ever had at Ron G. Middleton, you know what? We all say we're married with kids too as well right now.
Yeah.
Is to love where you're at right now, brother. Just love the situation right now, the wisdom of where you're at right now. The fact that you got your business going and you're financially prepared, the fact that you're a good looking dude, you're over 6 feet tall, man, yeah. you're like top percentages.
Yeah.
You're a very small percentage group of men that's out there, and more importantly, you love God, yeah. You love your faith, you love your family. You're a valuable asset, my friend, and so stick that way. And there's no rush. There's no rush. If there's any counsel, I will tell you. And by the way, the two guys that were here, Dr. We had Quintus and
George
and Dr. George. We all said the same thing to you, bro. Take your time. It's all
take
good.
Take your sweet time. Enjoy yourself. Yeah. Grow your business. Make your money. Travel. Meet people. Don't settle down just yet.
Because I tell you, the right woman by your side that raises a family with you and does it for 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years, the impact that you can make is not only in your city, in your community, it's in this country. Like, bro, you can be giving birth to the next senators and CEOs and presidents. Yeah. If you pick the right woman by your side. And the right woman by your side, since I'm here in Proverbs, is referenced in Proverbs 31, a wife of noble character.
And this is also a great way to end, too.
You're right. Yeah. If you want to attract a woman of noble character, guess what you have to have? You have to have noble character yourself.
Yeah.
And you do. So just stay vigilant in it, and just know that God is shaping a woman right now for you, mentally, spiritually, financially, and he's going to present. Because remember, when God was looking down on Adam, yeah. In Genesis, in the Garden of Eden, he's like, he's working, he's busting his tail, he's working, he's diligent in his efforts, he's naming the animals, he's naming the fish, he's naming the birds, and then he put him to sleep, because he says it's not good for man to be alone. God hasn't said that to you yet. It's not good for Milton to be alone. He said, let me see Milton continue to work the garden.
God's been distracted with everything going on in your side of the world, man. Man's been taking his time for these last couple of years, bro.
And that's my encouragement to men out there, yes. too, as well. Find the right woman to be by your side for the long term. Don't rush that decision. I hope that sex isn't a reason why you marry somebody or date somebody. Because, make a long story short, 10, 15% of your marriage is about sex. The other 85% is relationship, the intimacy you have with that relationship. You honor your God, your creator, your descendants, your ancestors, your impact, your last name. That's so much more about what a marriage is all about. It's not sex. It is in the beginning, because you think it is. But it's not. But with that being said, sex is even more intense when you got the right wife by your side, man. Bro. Anyway, let me send my text. Let me send a sex text to my wife.
Sex your wife?
What do you call that? Sex thing?
Sexed.
I could do that now because I'm married. But that being said, guys, I don't need thoughts. I don't know if we end this way. But that being said, put your thoughts, your comments below. You agree with us? You don't agree with us? By the way, I'm giving out 5 copies of Gotcha. If anybody out there watches this podcast episode 70 to its totality, towards the end, put Gotcha in the comment section below. I'll send you a signed copy of my book, Gotcha. And by the way, next Wednesday, we have a new announcement. Stay posted. We might be launching something that you might be the first to be in line with. That being said, God bless you guys. Appreciate you from Dallas, Texas. On behalf of my man, Milton Alvarez, I'm your mighty smart guy. Until we meet again, continue to love smart, and be mighty smart today. Bye-bye, guys.